All right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, my buddy Chad Clinton Freeman is joining me again for one of his favorite things, a new DC movie. It is Wonder Woman 1984, a movie which, as we get into this conversation, you will learn that I did not like very much, but Chad loved it. So I think our differing opinions make for a really great conversation. That is coming up in a second. I do want to remind you, as always, at the top of the show, though, to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever it is you listen to podcasts. You can also rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser, and follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. We also have a Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. And as a matter of fact, like minutes after hitting stop on this recording, we found out that Wonder Woman 3 is being greenlit. So we already have a thread going on that, and I'm sure it's just a totally calm and not insane conversation going on at all. Anyway, going on to this episode, Wonder Woman 1984, like I said, Chad is joining me for it. He's joined me on all of the DC movies since we started this podcast, and so it's great to have him back. And yeah, so let's get into that conversation. All right, so joining me today for what is sure to be a contentious episode is our DC expert, Chad Clinton Freeman. Chad, how's it going?
Hey, how's it going? It's going great for me. I'm excited for this. This will definitely be an interesting episode.
It sure will. I just at the top of the episode, for anyone listening who doesn't know, Chad loved this movie. I hated this movie. So that is going to be an interesting point of view to dive into this thing. But
I think that's the first time for an episode that we've done where we've
it's
been
possible.
Well, there definitely been other movies that have we've had that opinion on, but we've never done an episode
right
in regards to it. So
yeah, certainly yeah. I've been lukewarm on something you've loved or
right.
whatever, but not like this.
Right.
So yeah, it'll be interesting. But I want to start off with this, like, going into this, I mean, obviously we all liked the first Wonder Woman. What were your thoughts based on the trailer and everything? Were you like super psyched for it just based on what it, you know, how it looked? Like, not just it being another Wonder Woman movie?
The trailers after the first one, I wasn't that excited really, because to me, the trailers looked more like the feel of Wonder Woman and Justice League, which I knew it wasn't going to be, but that's what the action scenes that we saw, that's what it reminded me of. And I was definitely still excited for this film no matter what, and it was, you know, my number one most anticipated movie of the year, just for the fact of being Wonder Woman and Patty Jenkins. I was definitely on board. I was disappointed the way it got released, but was happy to watch it on Christmas. So there's just a mix of feelings. So I didn't really know going in what my response would be.
Sure. Well, I'll just say real quick, and then we'll get into some pieces here. But I try to go into these things without any preconceived notions. And I did see the mix of reviews. I mean, they were from, you know, another triumph to totally disappointing follow-up is what I was seeing in headlines.
Right.
I wasn't reading any reviews. The one thing I did have in my head, though, which unfortunately I think kind of turned out to be true, was that there was like very little action in the movie, and that's one of my biggest disappointments with it. But we'll get into that and more stuff as we're going through pieces. So why don't we start diving into some puzzle pieces for Wonder Woman 1984? What do you got for your first one?
All right. So I'm actually going to do a couple of different things. Usually I come with a billion movie pieces. My first two pieces are actually not movies. I'm still in a playbook from you.
Okay.
So, but the first one is a TV show. So I feel that this is a huge one, though, a part of one of the reasons I think a lot of people don't like this movie and they're turned away from it. But it's really one of those things that makes me really like it and enjoy the movie, I think, for what it was meant to do and what it was trying to do. And Quantum Leap is my first piece that I'm going to have here, because I think that the movie, I think one of the big things that the movie is trying to say is the message of seeing people for who they are, regardless of who it is you're seeing, if it's yourself or if it's another person. And that's something that in Quantum Leap, you know, we as an audience member, we always saw the main character, no matter whose body he leaped into. And he went, you know, he was a time traveler that would jump into somebody's body, and he would stay there until he fixed something about the history of that world. And then he would leap into another body. And so we as the audience, though, saw him each time. We saw, you know, I forget, Steve, I can't think of his name. But anyway, we saw that, you know, that actor, we saw that character, because that's who the person was, regardless of what body he was in. And the only other people that really saw him that way, if I remember right, was children and animals. They would always see him, but everybody else saw, you know, whoever's body he was in. And so I think with Wonder Woman, one of the important things is that for me, with the first one and then also with this one, you got to remember that Wonder Woman is very much, she sees the world as a kid. She does. Right. She's very, very innocent. She is a, like a pure, person. And so of course, when Chris Pine's character comes up, she doesn't, you know, instantly she doesn't see Chris Pine. She sees that other person. But then once she realizes and has that moment of, oh, it's you, she sees the person. And then we as an audience also see him. But at the same time, she sees instantly Barbara. She sees that character. Nobody else is able to see her basically as anybody worthy. She instantly is attracted to her. Fond of her, thinks she's funny and smart. They have this relationship. And instantly when she meets Max, she instantly is just like, you know, like we do as the audience, is like, you know, this guy's a scumbag. And Barbara's like, I like him. And Barbara's not able to see him. So I just think that's one of the really key things of this movie, though, is seeing people for who they are, or seeing yourself for who you are. And that's one of the things that she has to go through, I feel, with this movie, is really seeing herself and seeing her own wants. And that's the lesson that she learns. But anyway, so Quantum Leap was like the big thing that jumped out at me. It was like, you know, a big inspiration for this.
That's interesting. I like that piece, and I like your explanation of it. And I think it's a really interesting theme that I wish the movie explored more thoroughly, or like, you know, actually made it a specific point that I would have taken away from that. I like it more in your description than anything I'm seeing unfold on screen. And it makes sense, though. I do wish, as far as like the Wonder Woman, you know, having that kind of like childlike, you know, personality, the naivete, I wish they continued that more in this movie than the first one. That's part of what made the first one so much fun. And in this one, it kind of loses some of that. And I know that that's supposed to still be there, but I'm not seeing it on the screen at all. And that kind of, I don't know if it has to do with the writing or her performance, but it doesn't feel like she's still that way in this movie.
Well, see, I feel it's there. It's just, it's more sophisticated. That's all. And so, cause you know, you've got the flop of her and Chris Pine's characters, where she's in his place and he's in hers. And so that may take away from seeing that overall, but I still feel that it's there.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go on to my first piece, And that is the first one that came to mind. Now, you've made a lot of jokes about this being the best direct-to-video movie you've seen. So I'm going to go with a movie that I first saw on video, and I'm pretty sure it was a direct-to-video at the time. It's the Wishmaster series.
That was on my list, too. Yep.
Is it? Yep. Yes. Some of my favorite of those, just like those VHS tape horror movies that you would see back in the, you know, the late 90s into the early 2000s. And like some of the just like kind of goofiest, most fun horror movies with a demon, a djinn, I believe, who grants people wishes and they don't quite turn out the way they, you know, think they would be. And, you know, cause death and destruction and all that stuff. And that's definitely where we're coming from with this villain, Max Lord. And it's also like kind of builds around this idea that wishes are inherently evil and they're like cheating, which is kind of like the main through story with Wonder Woman 1984 from that opening scene with the little Diana training, to all the way to the end, like, you know, coming full circle with that taking the short road, taking the easy road to something is not the worthy way of doing things. And so that whole idea that wishes are like this evil thing and are cheating and are bad, is, I think, kind of the main takeaway here.
Right. And not only that with Wishmaster, this also, you know, all of these items were in these crates, and Wishmaster, that's the thing is that I always remember is when they're actually like moving the crate at the beginning of the movie, you know, those old horror movies, it's always like that, or where it's like the items in a crate and
some,
you know,
old artifact.
Yeah, these are all in these little crates. And yeah, definitely. And Wishmaster, I love the original. Of course, that was one that Wes Craven executive produced, and of course his name was slapped on it, made it look like he directed it. But no, yeah, Wishmaster is definitely a good one.
Me and our mutual friend MC Random had a lot of under the influence nights watching those movies, little marathons. But
well, I'll say the sequels were pretty bad, but I do enjoy the first one.
They have some good laughable parts. But, all right, what do you got next?
Well, okay, so I'll go ahead and I have a good one to go into that one that you just had. I was going to go into another non-movie, but I'll do that, come back to it. So I just go into this one because it plays off of Wishmaster, because I was thinking along those lines. That was the first one I thought of, too. And I'm just trying to think back of other ones that are kind of similar, because that's something that, you know, it's been used tons and tons of times, something involving wishes and, you know, be careful what you wish for. And I mean, of course, you've got that kind of a thread through classic Christmas movies. Even it's Christmas time, so, you know, Home Alone, and even It's a Wonderful Life. But I was thinking of a really good one, and what I came up with was the old Disney movie that I loved when I was a kid, 1981, Devil and Max Devlin. Bill Cosby. This was one of the edgy Disney movies. It was a bit of a controversy when I was a kid, but basically Elliot Gould, he's a scummy guy. I don't remember, some kind of business guy, and he dies. He goes to hell, and he makes a deal that if he goes back and brings three souls to the devil, that he can live out, you know, he won't be dead at that point. He'll be able to live throughout his whole natural life. So he goes around and he finds people that are wanting something. They have a desire for something, and he basically, you know, grants their wish, and in return they're going to give up their soul. And the one wants to be a singer, one wants to be like a BMX rider, and I think one of them like wants his mom and dad to get back together or something like that, or he wants a dad. So anyway, he you know, of course things don't go right, and he, not only is he tricking these people, but he's being tricked as well, because he was on the assumption that these people would also live out their natural lives, but they were actually going to be taken like as soon as they signed the deal.
Right.
And so he then has this moment of, oh, I can't do this. And of course, you know, I don't remember the ending. I'm assuming that he ends up going to hell, but it's a Disney movie, so I doubt it. Somehow he probably gets to stay. But anyway, that was the one that I came up with as far as a good one that involves, you know, the trickery and the, you know, wishing, the be careful what you wish for. There's always that trick to go along with it.
So I'd like to use this puzzle piece, which I kind of barely remember this movie like existing. I don't know if I've ever actually seen it, but I want to use this to point out that this is definitely a trend in a lot of superhero movies nowadays. I mean, I was almost going to bring up Amazing Spider-Man 2, just a bunch of bad villains, but this whole thing with a bunch of villains, we haven't even really talked about Cheetah at all because like, and she should be the main villain, I feel like, in this movie. But for some reason, we've got this whole Max Lord thing. Is Max Lord a major villain in Wonder Woman lore? Like, is there a reason they went with this?
Well, he is in DC in general. I mean, honestly, in comics and whatnot, mm-hmm. I'm not a big comic guy, so I couldn't tell you for sure. Mm-hmm. If I'm not mistaken, Max Lord is one of the main guys on Supergirl, the series. So, okay. And he's definitely one of the Lex Luthers of DC. So
okay,
yeah,
all right.
So he's very much a like Lex Luthor kind of guy, like a you know, scummy businessman. But evidently in the comic books, he actually does have, like superpowers.
Okay.
But he's more of like, telepathic powers. He's definitely somebody that, which I think is what makes a lot of the fans of actual DC comics and stuff kind of mad about this movie is that he's kind of changed.
Right. Yeah, yeah. They just kind of take the character and use it for whatever story they want to
right,
tell.
Right. Right. Yeah. But in that respect, I feel that, you know, if you remember, Wonder Woman had that Dr. Poison, and it's almost like this one kind of follows the same kind of thing. You actually had three villains, if you remember, in Wonder Woman.
Right.
The one who wasn't really the villain, but that became the villain. And that's kind of, in a way, that's kind of what Barbara does. And then, Dr. Poison was like the villain, and I know a lot of people were disappointed with her. So I mean, superhero movies, they just do that. They put in these extra side villains and things.
Sure,
but yeah. I don't have a problem with it. I mean, not a complaint of mine.
Yeah. All right. Well, I will go on to my next piece, which is one that goes right along with Wishmaster, and that is the Jim Carrey comedy Bruce Almighty. Where Jim Carrey is given these powers by God to basically have like godlike power, and due to no self-control ends up spinning the world out of control by granting too many wishes and not really, they're prayers in that movie, not wishes, but it's the same thing.
Right.
And the whole, villain by way of no self-control, and it wasn't really his plan all along to kind of ruin the world, just to have power and money, and it just kind of goes out of control. So that's kind of the motivation of the villain here is more so for that power and money. It's not so much to ruin the world, but then that's what he ends up doing.
Right. Well, and I've never seen Bruce Almighty. I know, terrible. Just not a big
spoiler,
Jim Carrey
spoiler
guy.
Alert, but I'm sure you could have imagined things go wacky.
Yeah, I didn't see that coming. Well, here's the thing. Speaking of Jim Carrey, though, and we were just talking about Cheetah, Jim Carrey in one of the Batman movies, as Riddler, that's what this villain to me, Cheetah, is a lot like is the Batman movies. So I mean, not just Riddler, which that was Batman Forever, also a lot like Poison Ivy in Batman and Robin, or even Catwoman in Batman Returns. The you know, smart, nerdy character who's kind of overlooked, that then, you know, wants to be seen and heard, and, you know, that's essentially the same thing here. I mean, I feel in a lot of ways the villains are throwbacks in this movie to the Batman movies.
Right.
I feel that this movie does a lot of things. It's very much going backwards to simpler times and to you know, things that we have seen before, as far as the structure of the film, the what it does, you know, with the wishing stone, and then also with the villains. So
right, and I'll say that that's part of what really bothered me about the movie so much is that I don't understand why you follow up the first Wonder Woman with that. Like, if this was a reboot, or if it was, you know, the first, you know, time doing a Wonder Woman movie or whatever, or like a separate series or something, sure, whatever. But where's Wonder Woman 2? You know, like, where's the movie that follows up the tone of the first one? And I understand that they're trying to kind of pay homage to, like, those, you know, classic silly superhero movies. But and that's something that came up even more on my second viewing, because I actually did watch this a second time. I was telling you before we started recording, and I liked it a little more the second time, because I knew going in that, oh, this is just going to be a silly, you know, a dumb, silly superhero movie. But I definitely expected a sequel to Wonder Woman, which was a good superhero movie. And so I don't know why the switch in tone was what they decided to go with.
Well, and you got to remember this, okay? The other big influence of this is the Wonder Woman series. And I mean, some of the outfits that she wears in this are, you know, almost, you know, taken from the Wonder Woman series, and also the setting of this, very similar, just the style and everything. So I think, this is just my theory, I think this is the movie that Patty Jenkins wanted to make the first time around. I think the first time around, it had more Snyder involved, Zack Snyder, and it was more in his world. It's now I think this is more her world and what she wants to do. I mean, she co-wrote this one, so obviously she had a lot to do with this one. And that's what I think. But again, I think a lot of it is tributing the original Wonder Woman series. You know, even, you know, having Linda Carter in there and having her character, you know, be a big part of this one, even though she's only in it for, you know, a couple of minutes. Of course, her character, I forget how you say it, Asteria,
it's something like that.
Yeah. you know, her character was the one that wore the armor, which you had the nice 300 you know, tribute there when you had the flashback of the armor, which I liked. So I mean, so all these little things to me, see, that's what makes it great, is like makes it fun. I like that this one, it's I mean, the first one was silly, the first one was funny, the first one was innocent, the first one was, you know, it was naive
funny. But it was funny, but it wasn't I wouldn't call it goofy. I wouldn't call it, like, you know.
I don't call this one goofy either. I don't call this one hammy, cheesy, corny, or goofy. That is Aquaman, and this is not Aquaman. Okay, this is not Thor.
Aquaman is fucking amazing, is what Aquaman is. But that's another story.
So and not only though, but Patty Jenkins also loves the original Superman movies, and this is a lot like the originals. I mean, it really there's so many things in this one that I think tributes almost all the Superman movies. You've got Superman 1, the end of this movie where basically, you know, everything's blowing up, and then all of a sudden that all reverses, you know, and the bombs disappear. That's a lot like Superman 1 where Superman flies backwards and reverses time. So that's a lot like that. Superman 2, the relationship between Diana and Steve is a lot like Superman and Lois, and then he even is willing to lose his power to be with Lois. So I mean that's very much a lot in line with that. As far as the way this one's structured and the complaint people have of it not having enough action is like Superman 3, which is also a very funny movie, which has Richard Pryor in it. Superman 4, you've even got a nod to Superman 4 in the mall. On the floor is a logo that looks a lot like Nuclear Man, which is the main villain in Superman 4. And also Superman 4 is a movie, an anti-war movie against nuclear weapons. And then even, I mean, the way she flies, you can take that more so as a nod to the original Superman than the way the modern day Superman flies, because it's more, you know, the modern Henry Cavill Superman is more, I guess, it's almost like a violent, jerky kind of flight that he has. You know, it's a really powerful, speedy, whereas hers is more elegant and, you know, acrobatic. More like Christopher Reeve. And then you got Batman VS to top it all off, when the climax of this movie, A Beautiful Lie from Batman v Superman, which is the main score throughout the whole movie from the opening to the Martha scene. So I mean, to me, it's a love letter to Superman in many ways in this movie, as much as it is a love letter to Wonder Woman. So to me, this movie is fantastic.
So before moving on, let's just let's just recap. We've got basically all the Batman movies and all the Superman.
Okay. Yes. And and let me throw this in, 2 Indiana Jones movies.
Definitely Temple of Doom.
Well, Raiders of the Lost Ark. The whole thing with her going underneath the truck and everything reminded me of Raiders of the Lost Ark. And the other one, Max Lord, to me is kind of like Kate Blanchett's villain in the Crystal of Skulls. Her quest to knowledge. She wants to know everything that the aliens know. She wants all of this knowledge, and then they at the end she ends up getting it, and then of course, you know, she's not able to handle it. So to me, this was also very you know, Raiders of the Lost Ark as well. And again, that's to me, that's a, of course, Raiders was a throwback, but this is a throwback to Raiders of you know, really 80s as well. So
So we got a lot of classic series that this is drawing from: Batman, Superman's, Indiana Jones's, and I will go with Ghostbusters 2 my next puzzle piece. You know, obviously we've got throwback to the 80s here. We've got bad sequel vibes, sorry Patty Jenkins, but also we've got the whole mood slime that kind of reacts to everybody's bad emotions, and it's everybody's badness, everything that's bad within people, and negativity that is going to ruin the world because of Max Lord's power being able to bring all that out and manifest it all. So, yeah, I thought of Ghostbusters 2, which I just rewatched last night and is absolutely ridiculous. but I thought had a few good funny moments. So what do I know?
I haven't watched Ghostbusters 2 in so long, I think since the theater. I do remember liking it at the theater, but I think then I tried to watch it later and was like, what is this?
That's what most people say, yeah. And I agree. It's certainly nothing compared to the first one, but I don't know. I think it has a few good jokes here.
Well, I mean, since you went to Ghostbusters, I'm going to say that the humor in this, I think it's the addition of Kristen Wiig, definitely gave me the Ghostbusters reboot vibes. Awkward, nerdy humor of Ghostbusters. And again, maybe that's one of the things a lot of people don't like because they didn't like Ghostbusters either. So I don't know.
Right.
But, but I enjoyed her in this film. I thought she was great in every part of it. And I loved seeing the transition. I felt that you actually did see a transition, whereas a lot of times in these movies, they go from nerd to they're the bad guy. I mean, you do see a transformation over time.
Up in one of my future pieces.
What was it?
That'll come up in a future piece for me.
Oh,
actually.
Okay. Yeah.
But I like Kristen Wiig, and I think she's I enjoyed that Ghostbusters movie, and I think that she does a fine job here, but one of the big problems with the movie, I think, is that she's not given the opportunity to be funny at all in this. I think, like you said, she's awkward, sure. But just like being awkward and dropping her papers is not funny. Saying stuff to people who aren't listening isn't funny. Like, it's just, it's only funny knowing that it's Kristen Wiig, kind of like a personality based humor, but there's nothing actually funny happening. Like, the Chris Pine character at least has a couple of funny moments that are like legit, like jokes, you know? Mm. And I wish they gave this character something more funny to do.
Mm. I gotcha. Well, and also though, I think her character also gets to play, again, going back to the Superman movies, but she's kind of like Christopher Reeve's Clark Kent in a way.
Sure.
I see just lots of inspiration with the Superman movies. And I don't know. I enjoyed her. I thought she was maybe not funny, but I humorous. I guess. I don't know. I like the relationship of her and Diana.
Yeah. I know what you mean. I will say one thing before I move on to my next piece, which is actually my last piece, but you know, we're talking about all these 80s movies right now, you know, the first Batman anyway, and then those old Supermans and the Ghostbusters. Mm-hmm. And I might as well right now bring up my biggest problem with this movie, Chad.
Okay.
And I don't remember if we've talked about this yet on our Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces or in private chat or anything like that. But where the hell is the 80s music? If you're going to set a movie in the 80s and you've got a Warner Brothers DC budget, why is there not one single 80s song in this movie?
And see, that's kind of the reason why I enjoyed this movie more than all of the 80s revisions, because it doesn't go there. To me, this one is more like, I feel that the intent of this one was to be like, this is not a movie tributing the 80s. This is a movie that was made in the 80s. And that's how you should watch it and view it as, this is an 80s movie. That's what I felt. Whereas like when you watch Captain Marvel and you got these 90s and they're playing Bush and No Doubt and you're just kind of cringe, that's how I felt. And I was like, don't do that with Wonder Woman. I mean, that was the worst part of Captain Marvel.
I'm gonna battle you for a second here, Chad. Okay, because this is an opportunity to tie in something I've been wanting to do with this movie, to the fact that Awesome Movie, or the other movie podcast that I produce, that is hosted by Josh Bell and Jason Harris, is currently in its 1984 season. Mm-hmm. And so let me tell you some movies from 1984 to demolish your point right there, okay? Beverly Hills Cop, 16 Candles, Streets of Fire, Gremlins, The Karate Kid, Ghostbusters. These are movies filled with 80s music, you know? Like, I feel like 80s music is kind of a big thing when it comes to, like, these big blockbuster 80s movies. And so, I don't know, that it just needs 80s songs in it.
Not Gremlins. Name a song from Gremlins.
Maybe you're right on Gremlins. Although Gremlins does have a very synthy score, though. So,
you know, I just feel like it's been kind of beat over the head a bit lately. That's all. So I was kind of happy that they didn't go there. But I mean, I am with you. If they could have found some 80s song that was like a good song, like that hadn't been overplayed, but I could just see them playing something that has been played a billion times, you know, like Take On Me, or somebody in the group said Come On Eileen. Just like, no, I didn't want to see that, and I was happy that I didn't see that. So yeah. But no, you're right. I mean, 80s music is a big part of a lot of movies. I mean, Ghostbusters, obviously the Ghostbusters soundtrack, and not just the Ghostbusters song, there's lots of other cool songs on there. You know, if maybe they could have written a specific 80s song, maybe that would have worked, but I don't know.
Right.
I was fine with it. I mean, did you want Huey Lewis on the soundtrack? Really? I mean,
yes. Yes, Chad. Yes. I would have raised it a whole star if it had Huey Lewis. But
see, and the thing is, though, is that in, you know, cause I was thinking Back to the Future, which the opening of this, when you got the kids shoplifting and they run out and then she stops the car from hitting the lady and all of that. That had a kind of Back to the Future vibe to me.
Sure.
And if it had, would a Huey Lewis song done anything more to it? I don't know. Cause that's what I think of when I think of Back to the Future. For whatever reason, I think of Huey Lewis.
Yeah, no, for sure. And by the way, I was originally going to include Back to the Future on my list, so I'm going to throw it on here anyway, even though we're just kind of briefly mentioning it. I'll go on to my last piece. I was saying it has to do with the transformation of Kristen Wiig's character. There's a trope that's been parodied to death, best parodied in Not Another Teen Movie, where the girl is not hot because she has her hair all messy and wears glasses.
Yeah.
And then she takes off the glasses and fixes her hair and all of a sudden she's hot. Yeah. Which it's amazing that we're still doing this, especially after Not Another Teen Movie. So that's my final puzzle piece here. I really like, I know you said, like, her personality changes throughout, and I would agree with you. She definitely does have an arc there, but as far as looks are concerned, if we're to think that the beginning Kristen Wiig looks any different from as she continues on, I mean, it's the exact same person.
Well, and yes, and you're 100% right in that. But again, you got to remember Superman and even Supergirl the series.
Sure.
When they're wearing glasses, hey, who is this nerd? You know?
Right. I think my problem is looking at it as a movie and not as something that is part of a great tradition.
So, I mean, to me, that kind of is a nod, though, to me, Superman and Supergirl.
Sure.
But I mean, I agree with that. It definitely is one of those silly things that's been done 100 times. And I mean, there is a difference, I think, between her just with her glasses and then the way she's carrying herself and the way she's dressed and her makeup when she mm-hmm. is to that point to where she's like wearing the fuzzy outfit and she's walking down the street going to see the guy that has the book. Mm-hmm. I mean, but yeah, I agree with you. That is a silly thing that has been done a million times in a million movies, and it's mostly I was trying to think of good ones, and that's a good one because she actually does have glasses. The one I thought of is like probably the one that really jump started all of the makeovers. To me the classic one, and that's Grease. Olivia Newton-John's mm-hmm. character, she doesn't wear glasses, but you know, she's kind of a conservative. And then the final moment of the film, she has this makeover. She's all in black, has her hair different, has, you know, mm-hmm. Dark makeup. Grease is the one that I took as this being a nod to. But I can understand people having a problem with that. But again, so that's my thinking, though, in watching it, is that I'm going back to the days of Grease. Grease was 70s, I think, maybe 79. But again, going mm-hmm. back to 70s, 80s, and trying to use that mindset of when I was a kid and watching this. And I think anybody that does that, I think, will enjoy it. You just enjoy it for what it is and not right. overthink all of these different elements.
And that's my job as a movie podcaster is to overthink all this stuff. So I'm screwed.
Well, so that's the thing, though, is that you can overthink it, and you can overthink it in the other direction. Maybe that's what I do. So
There you go. That's why I usually have 20 pieces for every episode. Speaking of which, do you have any more pieces?
I do have a bunch more, but I've got a couple of big ones. I could just mention a couple of smaller ones. Small okay. was an obvious one, E.T., with the little girl that's held over the balcony looks like, you know, Drew Barrymore straight out of E.T. Okay. And then the Max Lord character, what he reminded me of, you might actually like this piece, was Tom Cruise's character in Magnolia. Yes. That whole if you want it, take it. I was just like, it just felt so much like Tom Cruise's character.
I've heard some people say Gordon Gekko for that character. And then I also thought of Ewan McGregor in Birds of Prey, although of course that's too recent to right. have actually been an influencer.
And of course, Patty Jenkins herself has said that Donald Trump was definitely an influence.
Sure.
So yeah. Obvious, but I thought of American Psycho, which of course is an 80s movie, does have a Huey Lewis tie-in.
It sure does. And it worked.
He's kind of along that line, or you know, even Wolf of Wall Street. He definitely it has a bit of that to that character, and it is definitely 80s. So now, as far as bigger puzzle pieces, the one was first off, I love the opening of this film. The whole race is so beautiful.
Woof woof.
What, you don't love the opening?
when I rewatched it last night, I fast forwarded that 10 minutes before I started from the 10 minute mark. Just awful. I was like, what am I? What is this? Like,
and you realize that most of it's practical effects too, right? So these people complain about CGI in this movie, and I'm like, what are they even complaining about? But anyway, okay. So the opening of this, I really, really love that. I love the message, and I feel that you know, that message, I've heard other people say, why is that scene even there? And I'm like, that's the whole point of the movie. That
could have been 2 minutes long, but
I thought of another Disney movie. And again, see, going back to my youth, and this is also, I believe, like a late 70s movie, maybe 79 or so, The Love Bug. the Herbie movie.
Okay.
One of the problems that I have with that movie, because I rewatched it once I got Disney Plus, it was on there, so I had to watch Slow Bug, is at the end of the movie, it's not their doings, you know, but there are other people cheating, you know, trying to make them not win the race. The car splits in two. The first of the car takes first, and the second half of the car takes third. That's cheating, okay? They were disqualified. They did not win, okay? But anyway, there's that part, and then there's also another part where they have something happen, and a wheel falls off, and then it seems like, I don't remember if it was this one or if it's one of the later Herbie movies, but they're actually carried over a finish line, like not to win the race, but like after day one. On this one, I think they have like a wagon wheel or something. But anyway, again, it's cheating. And I love the Love Bug, but I always felt like that there's some cheating going on in that movie. Of course, they're fighting against cheaters, but at the same time, even if you fight against cheaters and you cheat, you're still cheating.
That's right. And yeah, you gotta take the high road.
And this movie makes it very clear that, you know, you're not going to win with cheating. And I really, really, really love that message. And I'm glad that, I mean, that was basically the message of the whole movie. You could watch the first 10 minutes and, you know, you got the message of the film. But some people, they say that scene doesn't have anything to do with anything. But
well,
anyway.
it has something to do. It just could have been 2 minutes long.
It's an amazing scene. The other big one, because I said I had some pieces that were not movies, and this gives me a chance to talk about one of the things that I love. That's Michael Jackson's Man in the Mirror, and you're probably going to groan, but anyway.
Hey, I love that song, but let's see how this plays out.
So again, this ties into what I was saying originally at the beginning of how this film is see people for who they are, and that includes yourself. And I feel that the end of this film, you know, Max Lord, with the Lasso of Truth and with Wonder Woman's words, he has a awakening. And of course everybody does, and everything goes back to normal. But I think that's coming from her also having an awakening as well. That's her fully understanding, you know, the thing about cheating, which I think comes back to her when they're in the plane and they're flying over the clouds and she sees the colors of the fireworks. And it's just about looking at yourself and, are you doing the right thing? And are you doing any cheating? And this movie is just about doing the right thing, even if it hurts, and, you know, just being the best person that you can be. And that's just so much positivity, so much love, so much heart, that I cannot understand how people don't like this movie.
I just want you to picture for me, Chad, if you will, okay? The end of the movie, directed by Patty Jenkins, Man in the Mirror starts. One fucking 80s song. How much better would it have been? Credits.
That would have been amazing. I would have loved
there
it.
There you go. Yeah. I'm with you on that.
No, if they could have put Michael Jackson in here anywhere, as long as it wasn't Thriller, I mean, I would have been totally cool with that. I'll never say no to Michael Jackson, okay?
That's right. That's right.
I do have a couple of small ones real quick.
Okay.
Right. Nightmare on Elm Street 2. The scene where Steve is trying on all the outfits, it just gave me that Nightmare on Elm Street 2 feeling of when he is getting dressed and he doesn't dance around and smack his own butt or anything, but it gave me that vibe of Nightmare on Elm Street 2. Again, that was a movie that would have been the 80s, yeah. And I was in fifth grade. And that just that little bit of him changing into all the outfits and showing them, just for whatever reason, it gave me that Nightmare on Elm Street 2 vibe. And I think I did have some other ones, but oh, the X-Men. Just the way Max Lord does the whole thing where he sends out himself across the universe and is like controlling, well, not controlling, but he's granting wishes. They remind me a lot of the end of the original X-Men where he was going to. I can't even remember completely, but he was going to do a similar thing in Staten Island, and he was trying to basically get all the powers of like all the politicians and stuff, if I'm not mistaken. They did a similar thing with Stargirl, the TV show as well, where he was communicating with all of the adults, and he was basically brainwashing them, and he was doing this also through some, you know, mystery, like, you know, satellite communication thing that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And you're not supposed to worry about the science of it. And again, you didn't in the 80s. You didn't question how the time machine went back in time. You don't do it now in this movie. Okay.
There you go. Yeah. No, I was actually trying to think of, I know that there's some movies that I've seen where like the villain is going to use Cable to reach people through their televisions. I couldn't really quite remember. I know it's happened pretty recently too. Like in the last few years, there was a movie like that, but I don't know, whatever it was. Write in, call in, let us know. But all right, so, I'm going to go ahead and do the finished puzzle here. I'll try to get in as many of your mini puzzle pieces as I can. I've been writing them down this whole time. So, so we talked about Quantum Leap, the Wishmaster series, The Devil and Max Devlin, Bruce Almighty, all of the Batman movies pretty much, all of the Superman movies, Batman v Superman, of course, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Temple of Doom, Crystal Skull, Ghostbusters 2 and the Ghostbusters reboot, Back to the Future, Not Another Teen Movie, Grease, E.T., Magnolia, American Psycho, Herbie the Love Bug, Michael Jackson's Man in the Mirror, Nightmare on Elm Street 2, X-Men, and Stargirl. I miss any big ones there?
You forgot 300, but...
Ah, yes, 300, of course. I was going to say... Which I've also forgotten our episode on 300. I need to get that posted one of these days.
I forgot also Gods of Egypt. I mean, and here's the thing. People that complain about the CGI, look at her in the golden suit... And then go watch Gods of Egypt when there's the transformation into, you know, this golden whatever he transforms into. And tell me that this has bad CGI. When I'll defend the CGI of Gods of Egypt. But anyway.
I'll just say that everyone feels like they're floating. But I'm not going to, let's not shit on this movie anymore that we have to. I did want to ask you, I saw an interview where Patty Jenkins said that there's like a climate change metaphor baked into this. Do you feel... that you saw that, you know, like it's about our, you know, personal responsibility and, well, you know, what we have to give up.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that has to do, though, with the, everything that I've been talking about in a way. It's just about, you know, are we doing the best thing? I think that was kind of the message with, you know, Superman 4, which is a really awful movie about war. And I think this one, you know, it also is there, and you can take it as about, you know, whatever the climate. You can take it about, you know, war, politics. Or you can take it as personal. I mean, that's what I think is that I think it's very, very broadly, it's a very broad positive message that can be taken for whatever people are dealing with or whatever people, you know, want it to say. So, I mean, I guess this movie's kind of biblical in that sense.
Speaking of biblical, last thing I wanted to bring up, why did they have to bring Steve back in some guy's body? Like, why couldn't it have just been bring Steve back? Because it's a little creepy the more you think about it.
How would you do that? How would you bring a dead person back? See,
magic superhero stuff. I don't know.
I was totally against him being brought back. I thought that was stupid. I was like, how are they going to do this? And then for them to do it like in this Quantum Leap kind of way of, oh, he's in another person's body. I love that. I don't understand why people have a problem with that. Again, that was when there was that article of somebody talking about how bad that was. And again, I'm just like, have you not watched TV shows and movies? I mean,
Chad, what would you do if somebody brought some other soul back into your body and then you had to spend all that time with Gal Gadot?
Right. I mean, I don't understand the problem. Why?
What's the problem there?
I mean, here's the spinoff movie. Where did he go? What was he doing? Uh-huh. I mean, maybe he's back with all the women on the island. I mean, oh yeah, he's in hell. I mean, you don't know where is he? What's going on? Maybe he's trapped in a Lifetime movie though, and there.
Oh
maybe
God.
That's the problem.
Poor guy. Oh well.
So if nobody's noticed, I do love this movie. The one thing I will say, the weakest thing of the movie to me was the score. I did like some things about it, but I like the fact that, you know, Beautiful Lie was in here, but evidently there was other music of Hans Zimmer from other movies. That just seems kind of a bit lazy. I do like the tweaked versions of the Wonder Woman theme, but, that would be my complaint of the film would be the score.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And it was another one of my complaints with the film, but it definitely felt a little lazy. But I think talking about it with you and my rewatch last night, I realized I was a little hard on it when I first watched it. I mean, it was also the first like major superhero movie I've watched at home, and it definitely loses something not getting to see it in a theater, you know.
That's what I think. I think a lot of people that are not liking it, I think that they may like it more in future viewings. I think the theater experience is having a lot to do with it. Yeah. I mean, this has some amazing, to me, some amazing action scenes in it. I love the opening. I love the scene where it's her versus the trucks and tanks. I'm blown away by that. And I even like the fight scene with her and Cheetah. To me, it does have less action than modern day superhero movies, and I think maybe that's the problem that people have with it. Again, it's just a throwback in so many ways. Go rewatch Superman 3 and then watch this, and then all of the older Superman movies, the action is not at all, in your face the whole time, like the more recent movies.
Yeah. Well, I am glad you like this, Chad. And I would like it if you would recommend another movie you watched recently that you also liked.
You know what? I was trying to think of that because I've watched a lot of really good movies here lately. One that would go nice with this one, as far as theme wise, is the movie Beneath the Sea of Lights, which is on Showtime. It's about a guy that he repairs billboards. And so he's always, looking up at these billboards that are along the freeway of fancy cars and watches and suits and all this. And he's dirt poor. And he dreams of having these things. And then he meets a guy that's not really very good guy, not very honest, and he kind of leads him into a bad path of stealing and taking whatever he wants, and of course he learns his lesson. But great movie. I don't know how to say that guy's name. The Barkhad
Abdi.
Yes. Great. He's great in this movie. I was very happy to see him in a lead role like this, and where he really just got to shine. Wonderful movie, has some good time vibes at times. Nightcrawler. It's like a good drama with some thriller tinge to it.
All right. Well, I'm going to try to squeeze this in before my end of the year list because, yeah, I hadn't even heard of it until you posted about it the other day. And it sounds good.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Well, right on, Chad. Thank you, as always, for being here. Anything you want to plug before we go?
No, but I did want to say, is it not ironic, though, that this movie is about doing the right thing, the Wonder Woman movie? And my fear is that as soon as this hit HBO Max, that it was instantly going to be pirated all over the place by everybody, worse than any other movie ever. And it's a movie about doing the right thing. So anybody who pirates it and watches it, hopefully the lasso of truth gets to them and they see the light and they feel bad about pirating it. And they fill up an envelope with money and send it to, I don't know who they could send it to, but anyway, that's my message. Don't pirate.
Good message to go out on. I completely agree. Do not pirate. Goddamn lazy people.
Jackson Saves the Moon. The incredible new children's book from Darren Garwood and illustrator Carl Osborne is now available at www.jacksonsuperhero.com, Amazon, Waterstones, and all other major book outlets. Join Jackson in a quest to bring back the moonshine, meet aliens from another planet, and fly in a rocket ship across the galaxy. Jackson Saves the Moon. Other titles in the series include Jackson Saves an Owl and Jackson's Solution to Pollution. Live the adventure at www.jacksonsuperhero.com.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation on Wonder Woman 1984 with Chad Clinton Freeman. If you're enjoying the show, we would love to hear what you think of it, so get in touch. You can, of course, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser, but you could also, you know, get in touch with me on Twitter at PiecingPod or join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, or, you know, our website, PiecingPod.com. You could just contact me directly through there. I'd love to hear from you all. Do you have puzzle pieces that we missed out on? Do you want to maybe join me for a future episode? Get in touch. Also, don't forget, I didn't mention it at the top of the show, but we do have a Patreon, the Produced by David Rosen Patreon, where I post bonus content and advanced content from this podcast, as well as bonus content from Awesome Movie Year, another movie podcast that I produce, and stuff from my music career, my albums and film scoring and all that kind of stuff. So lots of great content over there on Produced by David Rosen. It's patreon.com/bydavidrosen. So check that out if you enjoy the show and want to throw a little support our way. But of course, you could also just share the show, and that is the most amazing support in the world. So this is the last regular episode of Piecing It Together for the year. We'll have our top 10 list episode coming up next, but just want to say thank you to everybody out there listening for making this an amazing year. 2020 has been a weird year, but as far as this podcast is concerned, it has just grown and grown, and so many new people out there listening, and I really do appreciate it. So I just wanted to say that. And now let's close this thing out with a piece of music like I always do. 2020 was also a year that I released a new album, actually two new albums, the compilation album Beater, which is a whole bunch of music from films I've composed, but a new regular album as well, full-length album of all new music. It's called David Rosen. It's just a self-titled album, even though it's my sixth release, but I'm going to play a piece from David Rosen, which is available now, of course, on iTunes and Amazon and Bandcamp, and for streaming on Spotify and Apple Music and all that stuff. This is a track called Wonder. That seems like a good fit for Wonder Woman, right? So this is Wonder, which is actually one of my favorite tracks on the album. So enjoy it. Check out the album if you like it. And we'll be back with our top 10 list coming up real soon. Thank you.
an All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.